Hi everyone and welcome to Celebrating Cinema. Today I'm joined by award-winning producer and director Sarah Dosa here to discuss her latest film, Fire of Love.
This is Katya. And this is Maurice. Tomorrow will be their last day. They will leave behind hundreds of hours of footage, thousands of photos, and a million questions. Alone, they could only dream of volcanoes. Together, they can reach them.
Thanks, Sarah, very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Perhaps you can just start by giving us a brief synopsis of the story itself and how you came across this story.
Sure. So Fire of Love tells the story of Katya and Maurice Kraft, two intrepid volcanologists who met as students in the late 1960s over their shared passion for volcanoes. The two of them grabbed cameras and ran around the world, putting it very simply, trying to chase the most spectacular eruptions, which they did so through their extraordinary cinematography, their photography, as well as their collaborative work with the people they called friends. They died in an eruption in 1991, doing the very work that brought them first together. But I'm so grateful that Fire of Love, you know, in the process of making this film, we got to piece together the materials that they left behind, from their footage to their books, to tell the story of their love.
So how did you first come across this story? Was it sort of very serendipitous?
It was actually serendipitous in terms of how we came across it. The last film that I directed is a film called The Seer and the Unseen. Right. And that film was a Verite film shot in Iceland. For part of that story, we wanted some archival footage of volcanoes. And so we started researching, because Iceland is a volcanic island, and it was an important part of that film to include this archival footage. But yeah, we started researching archival footage from Iceland. And that's how we first learned that there was this French couple that shot hundreds of hours of footage all around the world, and that Iceland was one of their favorite places. And so the more we learned about them as people, though, aside from their just absolutely majestic footage, the more we fell in love, we really started to see them as these philosophical, playful, brilliant, incredibly bold individuals who are also a married couple. So that really intrigued us, and we thought could make for an interesting film.
It almost seems too good to be true that these two French volcanologists are not only in love with each other, but in love with the work that they do, and have over 200 hours of just the most unimaginable footage. I mean, it must have been an absolute dream as a filmmaker to stumble across this whole archive, but that's probably the end result. How was it crafting this story, piecing together all the different bits of footage? I think I'm right in believing there was no sound to this, so you sort of also had to reconstruct the sound as well, which in the end gives it this very visceral experience, because I think it creates a more tender experience for you as you're watching these images. You almost feel the heat radiating from what you're seeing.
Oh wow, thank you for those kind words. It was extraordinary watching all the footage, piecing it together. First and foremost, I was extremely lucky in that I had an incredible team. I was working with just two brilliant editors, Aaron Casper and Jocelyn Chaput, two wonderful producers, Shane Boris and Ina Fitchman, and the support of an amazing executive producing team from Sandbox Films, Greg Busted and Jessica Harrop. I was definitely not in this alone. It was very much a team effort and a labor of love. But Aaron, Jocelyn, and I truly watched everything, every piece of footage. We had about 180 to 200 hours or so of beautifully scanned 16 millimeter footage that Katya and Maurice themselves shot. And then there was about 50 hours of footage that came from television shows. You know, Katya and Maurice were celebrities actually of their time in the 70s and 80s, especially in France. And so they left quite a visual imprint. And so we got to work with that as well. But as you mentioned, the 16 millimeter footage that they shot arrived to us without sound. It was silent. And yeah. Aaron and Jocelyn just did an extraordinary job building these soundscapes, knowing very well that we needed kind of the narrative potential of sound, early on in the story, we couldn't have made this film. We couldn't have even begun the process really of assembling the footage without understanding just how much of a dramatic and important role sound plays in constructing the kind of immersive experience we really wanted, as well as kind of really hinting at the power, the force, and the unpredictability of volcanoes. So they truly went the extra mile in the editing process.
And you speak a bit about sort of the artistic direction there with this idea of rebuilding sound, but perhaps tell us more about why love was the guiding principle to this story, and also this overarching sense of the human construction of time, because you also decide to tell us very early on in the story what happens to these two volcanologists.
Yeah, I really believe you could make hundreds of films out of the legacy that Katya and Maurice left behind. And I hope people do. I hope people will continue to tell their story time and time again. For us as a filmmaking team, we were first and foremost drawn in by the idea of a love story. Not just a love story, but actually a love triangle between Katya and Maurice and their beloved volcanoes. This actually was generated by them first and foremost. I really believe that they are the ultimate guides. We really co-created it with Katya and Maurice, even though they passed 30 years ago. But in a book Maurice wrote, he writes, "For me, Katya and volcanoes, it is a love story." That now actually is at the very end of our film, but that was kind of a genesis point for us. That was like our thesis. We thought, this is Maurice's own words, describes his whole way of life, describes his philosophy, also describes his pursuit into the unknown. And we thought, if we can use kind of that as a framing device, that can first help shape our approach to the footage, because there was just so much we were working with. We needed some sort of orienting kind of a lens. And it also just felt so true to them. The audio recordings that they left behind, you hear them professing their love for volcanoes, and you feel it too in their imagery. Just the way both of them photograph volcanoes, there's not just the profound closeness, which is just jaw-dropping, just like how close they get to these erupting craters. But there's like that unmistakable like patina of love that you can feel. So all to say, for us, it just felt so true and so emotional and powerful to focus on a love story. We were also making this film, during kind of the early months of the pandemic, and we were met with fear and uncertainty and tremendous loss ourselves. And so getting to dwell in a world of love, not just for each other, but also for the earth, it felt like a salve, felt like a refuge. It was a very inspiring force for each of us on the team too.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I think now I can sort of throw you a big question here and leading up to it, and sort of with all this footage that you've spent with volcanoes, could you say what it is about volcanoes that is perhaps so awe-inspiring, and how has your relationship or understanding of volcanoes changed since working on
that? That's such a great question. I think for me, I am now endlessly enchanted by volcanoes. Maurice and Katya being the guides into this new volcanic world that I'm so lucky to have become immersed in. I've gotten to see what really feels like the sentience of our planet, like the true power, the aliveness, as well as the interconnectivity between all things, from kind of like the absolute minutiae of like pieces of hardened lava that Katya so like delicately touches in the film, to just like the enormity of thinking about these tectonic plates like moving underneath our feet at all times, how that connects up and breaks apart the world. I think my mind is just blown by the power of that force, and thus the power of our planet. I think the other thing too that Maurice and Katya have really taught me is that, in their own words, they say that volcanoes are beyond human understanding.
Yeah.
And I think for me, knowing that there's just like this vast force of creation and destruction and creation once again, that is our planet. I didn't grow up really with a spiritual background or a religious background, but I do feel like the way that Katya and Maurice have gone about their work, and for me, feels akin to kind of a new spiritual language, so to speak, of really getting to meet these forces of creation and destruction through our planet. And so that has just felt like a profound gift to me as well, to think of the world with new eyes in that way. So I could go on and on, but those are some of the top line things.
I think you definitely do get a strong sense of that. But it's also quite funny to hear you say how both Maurice and Katya say how it's beyond human understanding, and yet they dedicated their whole life to trying to understand it. Exactly. But then that is sort of the spirituality of it, because we're often always trying to understand the unknown.
Absolutely,
You talk about them being celebrities back in their time. Mm-hmm. They sort of also have this very Jacques Cousteau-like aura mm-hmm. about them, the sense of adventurers, explorers. But how did they sort of succeed in becoming so likable? And I mean, for us now, perhaps if we saw people now on TV talking about volcanoes, we perhaps wouldn't take to them in the same way. And what was it that made them such great communicators of their own passion?
That's a great question. I do think that there is a kind of a sociocultural and historical specificity to the time that they were really yeah. coming up within, in terms of kind of how media portrayed people, what celebrities meant at the time, kind of the wave of adventurism around the world and the aesthetics that went with that in the, you know, late 60s all the way up through kind of the 80s. But I do think that they were extremely savvy storytellers. I think that they knew that they, you know, it was their goal to get people to fall in love with the earth too, to yeah. learn about volcanoes. And they knew that if they themselves could be inviting spokespeople for that, then people would gravitate towards them. And their characters, so to speak, could be a conduit for this greater exploration of science and volcanism. I never thought that they were inauthentic though. They were never like donning a mask that wasn't to them. It felt almost like this a crystallized version of their true selves on camera. Maybe friends who could share stories that say deeply, but due to all the research and the interviews that we conducted, it really seemed to be the case. They had their greatest hits, so to speak. There's like a series of jokes that they would always tell, from, you know, Maurice being a volcano devil, and he would, you know, call out his horns, or both of them would joke about their volcanic relationship and that they erupt often. They loved good volcano puns. Maurice would often say that Katya cheats on him with volcanoes because she had seen 20 more active eruptions than he had, things like that. They knew how to be playful, and they also knew that their relationship was very compelling as well. Again, not in a way that instrumentalized it or made it untrue, but invited people kind of into their world. They knew how to communicate accessibility and accessibly rather. And yeah, with something that can seem so kind of opaque or complex, like, you know, geoscience, the fact that they were these kind of savvy communicators and could speak with, like, you know, accessibility and humanity, that really invited so many people to kind of come to learn and understand volcanoes in a new way.
And I think we could quite easily be distracted, maybe not distracted, but for lack of a better word, distracted by their sort of overpowering love for each other and volcanoes. But also their work has a great legacy to it in terms of everything that came after that. Perhaps you could just tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Katya and Maurice, you know, they were so inspired in 1980 by the Mount St. Helens eruption, which, you know, tragically took the lives of 57 people, including two volcanologists. But it was the first time they and many people in the volcanology community got to study kind of the power of what can colloquially be called gray volcanoes or explosive volcanoes. So they really, you know, dedicated their lives to trying to understand that this deadly force at, you know, the Mount St. Helens eruption was thought to have 25,000 times the energy released of the bomb dropped on Hiroshima in 1945. However, it was about 5 years into that journey studying gray volcanoes that they very tragically experienced, well, they weren't there firsthand, but the 1985 eruption of Nevado del Ruiz in Colombia occurred, which took the lives of 25,000 people. That was an eruption that many scientists saw coming, including Katya and Maurice. And they worked very hard to kind of sound the alarm signals and work with governments to understand kind of the risks associated, because there was all kinds of maps and tools drawn and made that showed what would happen with this eruption. Basically, there's a glacier on top of the Nevado del Ruiz mountain, which would melt, causing these mud flows, otherwise known as lahars, to race down the mountain and completely bury the villages at the foot of the mountain. However, those calls fell on deaf ears, very tragically, due to kind of complex political and economic reasons. And so many people lost their lives. Katya and Maurice were so devastated by that and really believed that they could have potentially done more, that caused a tremendous kind of reckoning with themselves and a turn towards how to communicate, perhaps more strategically, how to use their imagery to convince governments, local officials, et cetera, to implement warning signs or warning signals and systems, but also to understand really how these deadly forces work. And so, yeah, they really kind of uniquely were these communicators who understood kind of the power of this deadly force. They're a very rare group of people who really did kind of know the science of this seemingly unknowable force as much as humanly possible, that is, and really tried to work with that to save lives. And very tragically, you know, after their own death, their own lives were lost, but a week after, their work went on to actually save many lives in the Pinatubo eruption, because politicians in the Philippines, where that eruption happened, actually had seen, you know, their work. So all to say, their work has continued to inspire and to teach people long after their passing.
Yeah, I think it's probably underestimated almost how much they've contributed to the field. Today, it feels very natural and normal of all the dangers that we see with volcanoes, but it probably is a lot to do with what they've done. But yeah. I also wonder and you probably won't be able to answer why they were so fearless in the face of death and sort of the proximity to it. I think Maurice even said that his wish would be to die in a volcano.
Yeah, that's one of those questions that I would have always loved to have asked them. I have such a long, long list. But through our research and you know, their own visual record, we really kind of did understand that it's not that they wanted to die, but rather they were so clear on how they wanted to live. Yeah. And that was living with purpose and with meaning and with love. You know, kind of what you said earlier in our conversation, like there's something spiritual about that pursuit into the unknown, all the while knowing you can't fully understand. And I think that was so true with them, is that like they really believed that if they pursued this mystery of volcanoes, it wouldn't just contribute to volumes to the burgeoning field of volcanology, which it surely did, but it was a pathway towards living their most meaningful, beautiful life. And that was with each other. And that was with this awe-inspiring force. So I think that they weren't necessarily fearless, but I think that they understood their own relationship to fear. One of my favorite lines in the film is how Katya says, curiosity is stronger than fear, which makes me think that perhaps when, you know, they would feel the sensation of fear, they would understand, okay, I'm feeling fear. Let curiosity take over. They knew how to dance with fear. They knew how to engage with it in a way that allowed them to continue their work. And I think that also allowed them to live most boldly, and thus to understand that, as you know, they say that they could die at any moment, but really did feel like they would be dying in accordance with how they most wanted to live.
Yeah, that's a really nice answer. I think something that definitely translates or helps to translate what you're talking about is the choice of editing style and the color grading, which to me speaks very much of taking cue from the French New Wave, which obviously there is a whole relationship to what the story is set in this period itself. And to tell us more about that decision, whether it was deliberate and intentional.
The French New Wave influence was very intentional, and it was super fun for us to play with. That largely came about because of, again, Katya and Maurice themselves. And when we were watching their footage, you know, we would notice these really fun, playful snap zooms, for example, which were very much a hallmark of French New Wave cinematography of the late 60s and 70s. Their own writing, you know, they authored nearly 20 books, recalled kind of the bombastic and playful voice of some of Truffaut's narration or some of Agnès Varda. So all to say, these kind of aesthetic influences that were happening at the time were finding its way in their own work too. And we wanted to embrace that. There was also a lot of challenges with the footage, not just, you know, the fact that the 16 millimeter footage had no sync sound, but oftentimes the shots were very short. You know, it'd be like 3 seconds of an erupting volcano, then like 5 seconds of a gas vent, and then like 2 seconds of a bunch of shots that made no sense to us. They were beautiful, but it was like Katya reading a magazine, sitting in an inner tube, or Maurice in a group of people all like scrambling and laughing while holding a can of condensed milk. There was just things that didn't make sense to us. And we were like, this is beautiful. And these seem to be signs of their extraordinary life. But how do we put these together? One of the other kind of hallmarks of the French New Wave was associative editing, really trying to find these resonant and intuitive juxtapositions that could kind of speak to the larger sense of interconnectivity of the themes of the film. And so that was something too that my fabulous editors, Aaron and Jocelyn, embraced. There's all kinds of others, you know, like love triangles are very much at the heart of a lot of French New Wave films. And again, this love triangle felt so just like natural and true to Katya and Maurice's own story. So those things really served as guides and helped us too, as we kind of tried to cut down the massive amounts of footage that we had. And we're just, again, very fun and playful for us to get to experiment with through the process.
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the question still on people's minds would be, if they were listening to this, is how did this footage survive? And how come no one else had yet to stumble across all of this and make a story out of it?
Yeah, I'm sure that there's way more out there, quite honestly, than one we even had to work with. But what we were working with, Bertrand Kraft, Maurice's older brother, he was entrusted with a lot of the archive for many years, and he found a good home with it. Ultimately, at Image Est, the archival facility that we worked with, they preserve all kinds of beautiful archival footage. They're based in Nancy, France. And so they digitally scanned everything to us and preserved it quite carefully. And so we were extremely grateful to get to work with them. There had been actually films about them, you know, as they were still alive and shortly after their death. There's a great French film, for example, called The Rhythm of the Earth by a French filmmaker named Maryse Bergonzat. And she made her film in 1995. And that was a huge inspiration for us to watch her film. But, you know, that was 30 years ago. And so we feel really lucky to have gotten to kind of stand on the shoulders of people who knew them, loved them, made work about them many years ago, and to kind of bring out their story and their footage to new audiences today. So, but I have such new respect for the keepers, you know, the stewards of these archives. It takes tremendous work and resources and love and care to protect them. And I'm sure there's so much more out there that has been lost to time or that we didn't even find. So I just hope people will continue to seek out Katie and Maurice's legacy and that of other volcanologists too, to continue to tell these types of stories.
Yeah, I really hope this is sort of a catalyst, because I think there's so much to learn from all that there is available. And I think that probably leads to my final question of, we've probably discussed or touched on a lot of aspects, but what is something you would like people to take away from viewing Fire of Love, and in particular, the story of Maurice and Katia?
Yeah, I think for me, I mentioned this a little bit earlier on, but I think my greatest lesson is that Katia and Maurice led such meaningful lives and ultimately died meaningful deaths. And I think so much of that was because of their relationship to love. They knew what they loved, each other and volcanoes, and they pursued that love despite the implacability of the unknown. You know, I think to me that that's an incredibly powerful message for how to live life, especially as we find ourselves in increasingly unknown and tumultuous times. And I think the other thing too, that the way that they shot volcanoes through their cameras taught me so much again about just the utter sentience of our planet and of natural forces, and how one can live in relationship with the earth, so to speak. Not everyone needs to have a love triangle relationship with volcanoes, but their work has conjured such empathy for the earth in my own mind. And that's something too that has just hit me very deeply and is something I'm very grateful for. And again, it's a powerful message at this moment in time. So there's many, many things, but I think those two lessons are the ones that surface at the moment.
That's a great last thought. But yeah, thank you very much. I urge everybody to go and watch Fire of Love, which will be released here in the Netherlands on the 14th of July. Thank you again, Sarah. All the best.
Oh, thank you, Elliot. Really enjoyed this conversation.